I'm still living with your ghost. Lonely and dreaming of the West Coast. I don't wanna be your downtown. I don't wanna be your stupid game. With my big black boots and an old suitcase, I do believe I'll find myself a new place.
Good evening, everybody. How's it going today? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast. Bob, we got some new equipment here. What do you think?
Well, you're the techie here tonight now. I don't know. What is this gizmo?
I thought we should, take it to the next level. Step it up a notch. People are listening, and then we got to improve the quality, so hopefully it is improved. I guess we'll find out after the show.
We need to step up our game. No question.
We have to step it up. Well, Bob, a lot of news this week. New quarterback will be starting for the Green Bay Packers. Let's jump right into it. Aaron Rodgers goes down. You had the column the day of the game. What do you say?
First time in 22 years that a quarterback suffered a major injury. And so it's a momentous occasion. There's no question about it. The spread on this Eagle game, it was 10, and now it's gone to 1, I believe. Do you believe that?
It's wild.
Green Bay's going to be an underdog at home before it runs out here for the first time since mid-November of 2009 against Dallas. Since then, in 33 home games since then, underdog at home, I mean, against Dallas. In the 33 home games since that game, they've been favored by more than 2 every time. 33 straight home games is a favorite. And they got a great record, too.
So that's the impact of losing your starting quarterback. And I think that this is obviously a major topic of discussion, different opinions out there of what you lose in an Aaron Rodgers. To me, this was the one injury that they really could not afford, that they've been able to overcome a Randall Cobb, a Jermichael Finley, a Clay Matthews. Have some reservations with this one. It's going to be incredibly difficult. And coincidentally, this is a topic that you looked at the day before the Packers lost to the Chicago Bears. How did you come to this column idea? And needless to say, it did create a reaction, Bob.
Well, you know, this team, I thought about the most important player list that I did on Labor Day, you know, 1 to 53. And I looked at, I went back at that list, and I mean, 6 of the top 9 have missed a whole bunch of games already. And yet this team was 5-2 and playing very well, and the injury list was just going on and on and on. And so I looked at that list, and number one on there is the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, just as Brett Favre was for his entire career. They're just so good in the position. So I just examined what happens if the unthinkable were to occur. This is a question that the Packers talk about constantly. I spoke with Aaron Rodgers today about it in the locker room. He knows that. He says the men upstairs are talking about this all the time. So I analyzed what would happen. And I saw a coach and a coaching staff and a 53-man roster that has conquered everything else. And is it possible? Is no one irreplaceable in Green Bay? And that was the theme of the column. And then, of course, you got to get to the backup quarterback, and that was Seneca Wallace and Scott Tolzien. So when I examined their history, examined their schedule, examined the playing careers of those two guys, I thought they could get, they were 5-2. I thought they could get to 11-5. Still holding to 11-5. That would require a 6-2 finish. Seriously, for them, they're just trying to get in the playoffs right now. I think they can get in 11-5, but so what? They're trying to get in the playoffs, hold the fort till Rodgers gets back.
So the first drive of the game, Bob, the Packers are driving. Shea McClellan gets his mitts on Aaron Rodgers, drives him to the turf, suffers a broken collarbone. What crosses your mind in the press box?
Well, I had written a column a week earlier about extending plays that we discussed on the podcast last week.
Right.
And that's the most dangerous part of their entire offense is when he breaks through the line, just as he did on that play Monday night, and makes things happen. Well, he breaks through that line as he wants to do, as McCarthy wants him to do, as everybody in Green Bay wants him to do, And McClellan made a heck of a play. It's not Don Barkley's fault. He comes off that thing. Mm-hmm. He shows his hustle. He's got a great motor, that guy. And he just gets him at the exact right angle, you know. So, of course, what goes through my mind is that, I mean, this great player is down. And then it occurred to me also that I had written this, you referred to it as a doomsday scenario.
Correct.
Yeah. And so it was a bit eerie.
It had to be eerie. I mean, did you notice it as it happened in real time? I mean, you're pretty
busy.
Yeah,
I did. I did. I definitely thought he wasn't getting up right, and I saw binoculars at his face, and he was injured, no question.
So Seneca Wallace gets the call. He gets in there. Really tough situation for any backup quarterback. I mean, they're not preparing to play. I mean, he played, as Aaron Rodgers said on his show, what, 4 snaps during the week, and that's the norm for a lot of backups across the league. And it kind of showed. I mean, it was very simplified, very conservative. They tried to lean on the ground game, and it almost worked. They rushed for 199 yards. Eddie Lacy took his game to another level. James Starks scored another touchdown. As McCarthy said today, all he does is score touchdowns. And Seneca Wallace just didn't make enough plays in the passing game. Part of it was him. Part of it, the offensive line didn't help him out at times. Can this change? I mean, they have a week to prepare now. Seneca Wallace has a week to be the starter. We're going to get into all that. We'll talk about Seneca Wallace and whether or not that is a good option for Green Bay. But Bob, you know, I think that there was I've never seen anything like it in my 3 years here. Just the I don't know what the word is. The reaction to your column. I think many people that reacted to it maybe necessarily did not read it, saying that you predicted an injury or that you called this. It is one hell of a coincidence, and I couldn't believe it myself up there. But what has the reaction been from a faction of fans out there? I saw it myself a little bit, and as I said in our chat online, some of it is a little disturbing. I imagine it's a lot like with some of these players seeing their Twitter feeds after a costly fumble or an interception or something. It got a little nasty, Bob.
I mean, I've been around a long time, Tyler, you know, and I've written a lot of critical things over the years. You know, there was certainly nothing critical in this story. It was just a discussion of a scenario that could happen. It could the number one scenario to affect this team. I mean, the column was basically full of praise for McCarthy and Thompson, what they've done with that roster and this team. The response? Hundreds of emails that I would describe as filthy, obscene, appalling, reprehensible. On and on and on. For about 36 to 48 hours. Obscene, vile stuff. I'd never really seen anything like it. And like I said,
threats.
I've been critical of Brett Favre many times, and that opened up some things. But, you know, I now know that there's a segment of fans in every city, including Green Bay, that are just beyond the pale. And I mean, I'll never forget this, and things about purity of the fan base, that segment of this fan base in Green Bay, and the nicey nice quality of it. I know that's not true. I've read these irrational rants. So I know Green Bay is just like everybody else, these 32 teams, at least I assume the other 31 are like that, but I know what Green Bay's like, this certain segment. I've never experienced it before, and I'll never forget it.
Well, I'd like to think that this is a small fraction, that it's the minority of readers, of fans who would have that type of reaction. I mean, I saw some of it myself, and sometimes you got to put aside the cheese curds and get out of mom's basement and get a hobby. There's more to life than the football, than the Packers, and boy, reading some of that, I don't think you'd want to read any of them on air here. I don't know if we'd be allowed to by our parent company, but it was pretty bad.
I spoke with Aaron Rodgers today in the locker room about it, and he's experienced some of this in his past. Yeah. As a backup and then replacing Favre, so he knows what I'm talking about. Spoke to some assistant coaches today, and you know, they're laughing about the jinx, you know, saying I screwed them, and then they're just, you know, they're laughing about it. But, you know, it's not really a laughing matter when you're told to leave the state, retire tomorrow, you know, quit this, you're through in this market, the hate, you know, the filth, you know, on and on and on. So I know there's a lot of superstitious people. I don't happen to be one of them. I don't even think along those lines. I mean, this is just the law of averages caught up to Aaron Rodgers. It caught up to the Green Bay Packers. That's all you can say about it. But people apparently believe in jinxes. I don't have anything. I don't. I deal in real life. And so it came on me. And I'll never forget it.
It was pretty wild, but the season goes on here, Bob, and now the Green Bay Packers, they have to somehow replace the 2011 league MVP. How do you do it? I mean, there isn't one answer. There's a lot of moving parts here, but if you're Mike McCarthy, if you're Ted Thompson, they're going forward with Seneca Wallace here. What do they have in Seneca Wallace?
Well, as part of that column, I talked to a couple scouts, and I went through the depth charts. I got the 31 other backups, and I said, would you take Seneca Wallace or this guy or this guy or this guy? And we went right down the line. And I brought that that poll here. Let me find it. All right, and one scout said he would take 16 guys over Wallace, and he'd take Wallace over 15. So Wallace finished like 17th in that poll, okay? The other guy said he would take Wallace over all but five, and that there were seven ties. So let's say Wallace is tied for sixth as the best backup in the league, all right? The players, they got three guys got two votes over Wallace. Thaddeus Lewis of Buffalo, Tyrod Taylor of Baltimore, and Fitzpatrick of Tennessee. Yeah, Ryan. 12 guys got one vote over Wallace. Kirk Cousins, Foles from Arizona, we considered him a backup, from Philly. Matt Cassel, Luke McCown, Tarvaris Jackson, Drew Stanton, Ryan Mallett, Josh Johnson, Case Keenum, Matt Hasselbeck, Chad Henne, and Chase Daniel of the Chiefs. And three of them were in there. They lost one, and then they got a tie. Moore from Miami, Gradkowski from the Bengals, and Osweiler of Denver. So that's what Seneca Wallace is. And, you know, I mean, he played five exhibition games against Green Bay over time. He's not a great thrower. He's not great at anything. None of these backups are. But my thought was that with this staff, and it still is, that with this staff, with this roster and their history and their scheme, that he would be enough to win some games, a lot of games.
Well, the big topic right now in the locker room that we've been talking to these players about is 2010, Matt Flynn in the same situation. At Detroit, Aaron Rodgers goes down with the concussion. Flynn struggles. The offense struggles. They lose 7-3, and really that season is falling apart very quickly for Green Bay. With a full week of practice, with a game plan, with a specific game plan for Matt Flynn, they go into New England, and they almost beat the Patriots. They lost the game, but in many ways that was the game, the impetus for that Super Bowl run. Now, can you compare that situation to this one?
Flynn had been here, that was his third year, I believe. Yeah, his third season. Wallace has been here 2 months. Wallace has got 21 starts under his belt. Flynn had zero. So they're, you know, they're different from there. Flynn's only 6'1". Wallace is 5'11 and a half. 5'1", 1'4 in the Pro Scouts measurements. Flynn played well. He played well in both those games, against a horrible Detroit defense in the finale and against a really good New England team there in that night game. So how do you – all right, I'm doing a lot of talking here now. What did you see from Wallace the other night? You saw him come in off the bench, play 57 minutes of that game. What do you think?
I think that was probably more about survival, trying to get through a game and almost steal a game if you're Green Bay. I mean – what Seneca Wallace does best, probably the one strength he does have over a lot of quarterbacks, is that ability to scramble, to make plays on the move. They're going to have to get him on the move here, A, because, like you said, he's 5'11", B, because he's fast. He runs a 4.56, and he can do some things on the run. But if you're Green Bay in that game, not only has Seneca Wallace not been a part of the game plan for that game, but you don't have a backup quarterback. If you get him on the run and you have him doing some things, he gets hurt. Jordy Nelson going to play quarterback for you? Randall Cobb isn't even around as the emergency guy. So a full week is absolutely going to help the guy. That's something a lot of the players, a lot of the receivers believe. I think the question is going to be timing. I mean, you cannot replicate or come close to replicating the timing that Aaron Rodgers had with James Jones and Jordy Nelson specifically. That was years in the making. Seeing the same things in coverage, reacting to it without needing to say a word, without needing to make a signal. Aaron Rodgers knows, okay, Jordy Nelson's going to stop on a dime. That back shoulder throw is going to be there. Okay, he's going to take it deep. You don't really have any of that. You can't find that in 1 week. So the timing's going to be an issue. You saw some of that in the game. It's not as fast of a ball as Aaron Rodgers, as Miles White said. He says it gets there. They do believe he can throw the ball downfield, even though he didn't do a ton of that against the Bears. He's going to have those opportunities. I mean, you have to think that Philadelphia, which has the worst secondary in the NFL statistically, will be stacking the box to stop Eddie Lacy. I mean, that's going to be their number one plan. So he should have those one-on-one opportunities in the passing game. Just a matter of executing and taking advantage of those matchups.
A ton of people always said that if Aaron Rodgers ever went down, this team is toast, right? Kaput, season over. I don't buy it.
You don't buy it?
No.
So you're going to stand
by it? Why would I buy it? I mean, this coaching staff's been there, Tyler. They've had a lot of losses, and
they've had a lot of losses, but they have not lost their quarterback. Nothing close to this.
So people have won with backup quarterbacks.
I guess you have Matt Castle in New England in 2008. They go 11-5. They didn't make the playoffs, but they were able to go through a whole season with him as the quarterback. Indianapolis, they went 2-14 with Curtis Painter and the gang. Just fell apart, and they've fallen to Andrew Luck. So you've seen different extremes here. I don't know. I mean, I remember talking to Devon House after the Detroit game, and he said, you know, we're going to be okay. We can get through all these injuries as long as we have 12 over there, as long as we have the quarterback. I think that was in the back of a lot of guys' minds that they can fill in the gaps elsewhere. That's just my opinion. I think they can win games. Aaron Rodgers is out. All right, Bob, let's look at it. Six weeks. Can they go 500? I mean, can they win a couple games?
You know my answer. Yeah.
All right. They do have to change a lot of things here offensively with Seneca Wallace. You're not just going to hand him the keys to the Corvette here
Mike McCarthy. They can't do a lot of the no huddle and the changing at the line, right? You know, they can't send him up there, I don't think, to the line too many times with three runs and a pass or two and expect him to make all those calls. They just can't. You saw the other night, McCarthy went two back on his first 11 snaps. He never goes two back with Rodgers, you know?
And yeah, John Kuhn made an appearance.
Yes, he did, yeah, all at fullback. So I think they can find a way to win some games. Now, if this was the schedule was flipped and they had those seven games they played coming right now, I wouldn't have written that column.
Mm-hmm.
You
right,
know?
Right.
A lot of this
right.
was based on the schedule. Now, the other factor is Scott Tolzien. Now, in that column, I said, after analyzing Wallace and Tolzien, and Tolzien could be a factor here very right. soon. He could. And what Tom Clemens said about this guy last week, I mean, he said some impressive things to me about him. He's 6'2". He's been a couple of years in San Francisco. He's been in a camp with Norv Turner in San Diego. He's been around some good quarterbacks and some good quarterback coaches, Roman out there and Harbaugh. The guy's probably going to get his shot, mm-hmm. whether by injury or by coach's decision. And who's to say? I mean, one of those scouts loved this guy. People like him. Cleveland tried to sign him. So I don't know a whole lot about Tolzien, but other people tell me that he's pretty darn good. He could be a factor here soon also.
I mean, that's the other thing. We haven't really had the opportunity to watch these two quarterbacks extensively. Practice during the season that we watch from a media point of view is much different than training camp when you're seeing these guys day in and day out and they're thrown to the fire. And frankly, the Packers don't get to see these guys a ton in game situations at practice. But it was interesting, though. I mean, you see Tolzien out there before games, 2.5 hours before the game on the field, working with other practice squad players, and Ben McAdoo, the quarterback's coach, is out there working with them. They've been investing a lot of time in him, and he's really the latest young developmental kind of quarterback that they have in the system. It didn't work out with Graham Harrell. It didn't work out with B.J. Coleman. So Scott Tolzien now gets the chance. Isn't it wild, Bob, that, I mean, the two quarterbacks in Green Bay, the two top quarterbacks in Green Bay are basically outcasts by San Francisco. The 49ers didn't want either guy. They moved on with Colin Kaepernick and Colt McCoy, sent these guys to the street, and that's who the Packers are relying on at the most important position in all sports.
Right. Anything else about the QBs?
I mean, we can talk about the QBs, the passing game, but it's going to come down to Eddie Lacy and James Starks, right? In that ground game, the offensive line, can they continue to wear teams out? Can that be the focal point of this offense? It's been trending in that direction really all season, and now more than ever. They're going to see guys in the box. And the Packers can probably take a small, I don't know, measure of optimism in the fact that without Aaron Rodgers out there, with the Bears loading up to stop Eddie Lacy, he was able to still get 4 yards, 5 yards, and bust loose for a big run here and there.
The Bears really have a weak run defense, you know? I mean, you got two rookie linebackers starting. You got DTs just, you know, they're so thin there. McClellan's a small guy, and yet, and the Packers blew him over in the run game. Okay, we can talk about the Eagles in a few minutes, but that's going to be one of the easier opponents to run against. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they're going to see that 8-man front. We don't know if TJ Lang's playing the right guard. The assumption is no, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably a stretch for him to play, and so you have Marshall Newhouse.
That hurts the run game, obviously. You got Barkley moving inside, who's a lot smaller than Lang. Mm-hmm. And then you got Newhouse outside, who's not as good a run blocker out there.
You know, and I just want to add this, and I'll have something in the Journal Sentinel about it. I had a chance to catch up with Matt Hasselbeck today for a good 20 minutes. And here's the quarterback that knows Seneca Wallace best. He played with him in Seattle all those years under Mike Holmgren and worked with him day in and day out. And even beyond that, Matt Hasselbeck really credits Mike McCarthy for jump-starting his career as a quarterback in general when McCarthy was the quarterback's coach in Green Bay in 1999, doing that story a couple summers ago to figure out why Mike McCarthy is considered a guru of sorts at the position. Hasselbeck really did credit him for that. Hmm. He thinks that this is a great fit. Wallace's skill set and what McCarthy wants to do on offense, he thinks that Wallace is going to play really well, that the Packers' offense will continue to move the ball, continue to score points. And, you know, Hasselbeck's a smart guy. I don't think that he was just blowing smoke and supporting a friend, supporting a teammate. He broke it down, and we'll have more of that in the paper. But he sees Seneca Wallace excelling in this role, in this situation, in a pressure-packed kind of environment for Green Bay.
You know, he might be right. Wallace now is 33, right? Mm-hmm. And he had his best season, I would say, in 08, which is 5 years ago when you look at his resume. So I don't know if he's the same player. We're going to find out. When I talked to Wallace last week, I mean, he said if he ran about a 4.52 coming out from Iowa State. And he thought if he was trained fully, he said it's all in the start, he thought he could run 4.4s. So I think the guy's wheels are good. I don't know if they're that good. Another scout thought he had lost a step in the mobility department over time. We'll see.
And that's exactly what he told me at his locker today. We were talking about the same thing, his speed. You go back, everybody that's listening to this should really go onto YouTube, type in Seneca Wallace, Iowa State. They call it the run with the Cyclones. Mm-hmm. And he had this run where he reversed field that seemed like 18 different times,
really?
Running all the way through the defense. They couldn't touch him. It was like Vince Young in the Rose Bowl against USC with speed. And I asked him, is that guy still around at your age? Second oldest guy in this locker room, is that player still around? Just kind of smiled and said, we'll see. I think that you're going to see Seneca Wallace on the move a lot Sunday. They're really going to try to take advantage of what he can do best. As McCarthy said, they don't want one player holding this offense back. So they're not just going to baby him. They're not going to hold his hand through this game.
Do we want to talk about what how the Eagles would defend him? Should we talk about that?
Absolutely. Let's jump in there.
So the coordinator is Billy Davis. He was a Packer assistant under Mike Sherman in 2000, a defensive assistant quality control guy. He was the coordinator at San Francisco in 05 when Mike McCarthy was the offensive coordinator. So Billy Davis, he's been around, and he learned his ball, really, from Dom Capers as linebacker coach in Carolina for 4 years.
And he has a familiarity with Seneca Wallace.
He coached,
in Cleveland when Wallace was in Cleveland.
So he was coordinator maybe or something? I'm not sure. He was on the staff, right?
Right.
So he knows Wallace, yeah. Okay. Billy Davis, in talking to people this week, he's a pressure guy. He's a 3-4 fire zone guy. He's pressuring 38% of the time, which is sixth most in the league. And he did not pressure Terrell Pryor on Sunday because Pryor runs too fast. Pryor, watching that game, Tyler, Pryor can fly. And he's unreal. So I don't think Seneca can run like Terrell Pryor. I know he can't. But if you pressure a running quarterback, you're opening yourself up to big gains, you know?
Well, we saw that to an extent in the playoffs last year. At least the Packers weren't disciplined. They didn't stay home against Colin Kaepernick.
So Wallace has been around. He's a calm guy. He can exploit that. And Billy Davis is not going to rush willy-nilly. He's just not. He has a good pressure package, both with cross blitzes, and he's got Trent Cole and Connor Barwin outside. They're both pretty good rushers. And he's got two really good inside players in Cedric Thornton and Fletcher Cox. Davis knows McCarthy. And, you know, when you show a protection, you don't go into a game with a whole lot of different protections. And when McCarthy shows what he's got in that first series, Davis is going to jump right on that thing. And he is going to call blitzes or fronts that are best used to equip to handle that. McCarthy, if he puts Kuhn in there and goes two backs, you're going to have Nate Allen coming up there, and it's going to be an eight-man front immediately. The Packers are going to see that. That's Davis's track record. He's a pressure guy, and he's got a young defense. We can talk about personnel in a bit, but they're 32nd in yards. But a big part of that is because they're always on the field. They face more plays than any other defense because their offense scores so quick. The offense is no huddle, hurry, 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 hurry up. And so the Eagle defense is just on the field.
All right, so offensively, is Nick Foles pretty much Joe Montana this season?
God, he's got 13 touchdowns and zero picks. He's got zero turnovers. He was terrible against Dallas. Dallas ate him up 3 weeks ago.
How did they do it?
They eventually knocked him out with a concussion.
I guess that's how they did it.
Yeah. They got their hands on DeSean Jackson. They bumped him off and redirected him off his routes. They did some good pressure on Foles. They kept switching coverages. Even though Foles is a second-year guy, he's got 29 on the Wonderlic, he reads coverages quick. He gets the ball out of his hand, and he really didn't show that at the University of Arizona, but he's doing it now.
And boy, count me as somebody who was with the masses saying there's no way that this guy could excel in a Chip Kelly offense when he's actually athletic enough, a quick decision maker, has a strong arm, good vision, makes the right reads. Chip Kelly told us on his conference call this week when I asked him there, well, what did you think, when a lot of outsiders were pretty much saying that isn't the right fit? And he said, well, they didn't know what the heck they were talking about. They didn't know our offense, and they didn't know Nick Foles. So this is going to be a challenge for Green Bay's defense. This is a different offense. Everybody knows what Chip Kelly did at Oregon. Innovator isn't the right word. It's almost kind of revolutionary what he was doing with the no-huddle offense. So talk to a few players about that in the locker room. We're going to try something new here. Here's what Morgan Burnett and M.D. Jennings had to say about that Philadelphia offense. First, Burnett.
I guess when we went back and looked at the film, what happened there in Chicago, you guys?
Like I said, those guys, they made their sure plays. We had to... They had that long drive on us at the end, and that really was the key point. So we just looked at the film and just seen that we had to get off the field on third down. And that's any given Sunday. Like, if you let a team get a long drive like that, Hawks are going to be against you.
It's kind of like 2011 again, though, with some of the missed tackles. Wasn't this probably kind of corrected last year?
Yeah, I mean, we can't hang our hat on it. We go in, clean it up, fix the mistakes, and we got a short week. Now, our main focus is really just Philadelphia Eagles. Last week is behind us. Now, we're trying to find a way to get better this week.
Different offense than you're probably going to see all year, right?
Yeah, it's a different offense. That's a fast, up-tempo offense. So, just guys communicating, getting lined up quickly is the key. And we're looking forward to the matchup.
All right, that was Morgan Burnett talking a little bit about the struggles there against Chicago too, which we haven't even dove into with the news on Aaron Rodgers. Probably the worst defensive performance for Green Bay this season.
I agree.
Missed tackles, poor coverage, couldn't contain Matt Forte.
Lousy run defense, yeah.
All across the board. So, all right, in addition to that, we're going to get into personnel for Philadelphia soon. But first, here's what MD Jennings had to say about that defense.
We're not concerned. Some things we can learn from that tape, just got to learn from it and move on.
What did you see on the tape? What happened?
We just wasn't consistent. We gave up some third down stops. We were unable to get off the field, and they made more plays than we did.
You got Philadelphia coming in. This is the fastest offense you've seen in college in the pros.
I played them well. Against a bunch of fast offenses in college. I never played Oregon. Schools like that, but we'll see. We just have to adapt to it and continue to get out there and make plays.
All right, so that was Burnett and MD Jennings. What's ironic here, and I don't think that Green Bay is going to come out here and be gripping it and ripping it to the degree of the Philadelphia Eagles, but doing that story in the offseason on the Packers' no-huddle offense and them wanting to speed it up themselves, players said they actually watched Chip Kelly's offense at Oregon in offensive meetings to try to get a sense for how they're able to just get off so many plays. Remember, that was McCarthy's big thing this offseason. Mm-hmm. We're going to take as many punches as we can. Seneca Wallace is the quarterback now instead of Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if you're going to be seeing that as much. But as McCarthy said today, they do want to get off a lot of plays and try to play their game as much as possible. That's going to be really the game within the game is the tempo, the speed of the game. Can the Packers keep up? Do they want to speed it up? Do they want to run the ball and control the time of possession? It's going to be interesting, Bob. I mean, if you were the Packers here, what do you want? What kind of game do you want?
When you look at the Eagle defense, you want to exploit their secondary. Their best DB, Bradley Fletcher, I don't think he's going to play. A source said yesterday that he's got a pec injury, and I don't think he's playing. So he's their best DB at corner. So you're talking Kerry Williams, the former Raven. He's all right. He's a pretty good man player. You got Brandon Boykin, a real small nickelback. Can he play outside? Very questionable. He's 5'9". Questionable. So who do they start outside? Curtis Marsh, who was re-signed Tuesday, or Rock Carmichael, another journeyman who's been cut. That's the cornerbacks. Nate Allen, he's a solid safety. He plays a lot in the box. He runs the show. He's pretty good. The other safety, you got Earl Wolfe, a rookie, fifth-round pick. He's okay. And you got Patrick Chung, a former Patriot, who's aggressive as heck. Sometimes he's too aggressive. He just runs himself out of place. So it's not a good secondary. If you can block him, it's not a bad front. And Billy Davis can pressure, but Wallace can run through that pressure with if he blitzes. The inside backers are pretty good on cross blitzes. Michael Kendricks is a great athlete, but really he's short circuits. And you got D'Amico Ryan, who runs the front seven. He needs to be protected. He's just an okay player. So, I mean, hey, the defense is there to be exploited. Green Bay, if Wallace plays decent, they run the ball, and the offensive line plays a lot better, they can score 24, 27, 31 on this defense. All those things are within reach. It depends on the game plan you're talking about and the level of play. The guy's got to play.
Right.
Yeah.
He just has to play. I mean, I don't think we've really seen who Seneca Wallace is yet as a Packers quarterback. This is going to be the test for him. If he goes out there, lays an egg, then we can recharge this whole discussion about who should be the Packers quarterback. But this is the test Sunday. Okay, you got the offense in front of you there for Philadelphia. What do you see, Bob?
Okay, offensively, like you said, Tom, they are so fast. The center, Kelsey, is just rushing up to that ball. And it's got to be tough on these offensive linemen. I mean, they can't get a break either. I know it affects somebody like Jason Peters, their really good left tackle. All right, so let's look at the line. Their left side is really good. Peters is one of the top 6-8 left tackles in the business. He's back off a couple torn Achilles. Evan Mathis is a top 10 guard. In his ninth year with his fourth team, but the guy has really improved in the last 3-4 years. He's an excellent player. The center's undersized. Kelsey, not very good. The right guard, Harriman, is in decline. He's been an 8 or 9 year starter. And the right tackle has been a problem. This is Lane Johnson, the fourth pick in the draft. He's, you know, the ex-quarterback, ex-tight end. He's susceptible to bull rushes and power. And so Mike Neal or Matthews or somebody can get after him. Maybe Nick Perry with his bull stuff. So that's their line.
On Lane Johnson.
It's not bad.
You study the NFL draft as much as anybody that covers pro football. Did you like that pick, Lane Johnson? I mean, they could have gone in a lot of different directions there.
I thought it was high, real high, but yet, look at the guy is a starting right tackle for a line that, man, who'd they have last year playing there? It was a disaster. Maybe Harriman's was outside last year. Mm-hmm. So he starts, and linemen do that. He's played every game. He starts. It's hard to criticize it now. He'll get better. He'll get a lot better, you know. The running back, LeSean McCoy, you've seen him a lot. What do you think of him, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, what everybody else, he's speed, shifty, versatile, seems to be a perfect fit for everything they want to do.
They got a pretty good backup in Bryce Brown. He had all kinds of off-field problems. He only lasted two games in his sophomore year, thrown off.
Fumbling issues.
Yeah, there was. But he's a pretty tough downhill runner, and he's not a bad talent. It's all one back, you know. Foles, we discussed him. Now let's look at the receivers. DeSean Jackson. You know, so the Packers are going to look at that Oakland tape with Foles throwing seven touchdowns, right? And it was extremely impressive. The guy was accurate, and he is an accurate thrower. The Raiders, I still say I'm not really sure how they won a game this year. They are that bad. DJ Hayden, who they drafted in like number 12 from Houston, who had that horrible near-death injury, he couldn't handle Riley Cooper. He's falling down, peaking. It was atrocious. On the other side, Mike Jenkins, he fell down on a bomb to DeSean Jackson, wide open. Charles Woodson, let's just say he's blown stuff as he did in Green Bay, and he's not a shadow of what he used to be. I mean, they have problems in Oakland, and they just got shredded by a really good, aggressive play caller in Chip Kelly.
Charles Woodson's kind of that's a little symbolism there for the difference between Green Bay and Oakland's secondaries there is a – Green Bay did not want him around.
I mean, they're not paying him much, but Green Bay made the total right call there. I know some fans thought that this guy should be back. Well, he shouldn't have been back. And the tight ends are good. Brent Celek's a good veteran, and Zach Ertz from Stanford is a good second backup for rookie. So you got weapons, you got a decent line, and you got a young quarterback who's on the come, but yet in his second and third last games, in his previous start before Oakland, he was overwhelmed by the Cowboys. And that's not a great Cowboy defense.
How big of a difference would Clay Matthews make, Bob?
You saw him. You've seen him in that cast, right? Boy, it's going to be tough to play with that thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like a huge, I don't know, but he can't grip anything. But still, having his presence alone and his intensity and his fire, something's got to light a fire under that defense or the Eagles are going to win this game.
I think Dayton Jones called him the Mega Man, that comic, that cartoonish character, whatever. You ever seen the movie District 9, Bob?
Missed that one.
With the aliens on planet Earth. Well, this human gradually turning into an alien. He's got this big thing on his arm. Remember Morgan Burnett was saying he kind of looked like that guy a couple years ago when he had a club. It affects you. I mean, Burnett, how do you defend passes? How do you catch passes in the secondary? It affected his tackling. Remember the big play he gave up against St. Louis? I think it was the first game he had that cast on in the flats. I broke a tackle. Clay Matthews, I think even more so. I mean, the way that he's got to grab a hold of guys, shove them, clutch them, get rid of them, rush the passer, let alone tackle, grab a ball carrier, and finish. And he can't really simulate that to the degree that he would need to in a game this week. They don't even have a padded practice this week. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge. But I guess the question here, if you're Green Bay, is do you take Clay Matthews with the club, or do you take a raw Nate Palmer, Andy Malumba off of that ankle injury? They haven't really given him much as far as sacks and those big plays. I think you would rather take Matthews.
I mean, Clay's going to be rusty too, and his conditioning is going to be affected. You know, I mean, everything. But still, even if he can't grab Foles, he can at least flush him to somebody else,
right,
to Daniels or something. I mean, they need pass rush. Daniels did not have a good game the other night. Dayton Jones has really not been a factor, and Palmer was just shut down by these Bears. And, you know, it's possible. Well, I would say the Philly offensive line is about on a par with the Bears.
I mean, Matthews makes everybody else's lives easier. I think you see Mike Neal at his best when he has Matthews over that other side, too. So it would be huge to get him back. And, boy, if you read into his comments, he wants to be out there. So it will be interesting. You know, the Bennett's fracture, though, you don't want to do further damage to that. So they're going to be cautious with that cast. I think that's why it looks like a basketball on his hand out there.
Tom Silverstein wrote that illuminating story a couple weeks back. You're right. Nick Perry, you assume he'll play?
Sure sounds like it. Nick Perry, Mike Neal, probably a back to a rotation of sorts there, would you expect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those three guys rotating, yeah.
You know, what else do you want to talk about here, Bob? Is there a player that you're really going to be focusing on, a matchup, a guy who has to step up for Green Bay?
Let's just take a look. Yeah, I think they got to get more out of receivers other than Jordy Nelson, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. I haven't talked to James Jones. Maybe you have. I don't know really about his knee. But I didn't see a lot of separation from him the other night, and they need that desperately. Wallace is not going to throw the ball with as much anticipation or velocity or RPMs or anything. These guys need to separate for him, you know, to clear and to square up and to be accessible to this guy. He needs it big time. He doesn't have Finley anymore, you know. And they doesn't have Cobb, guys who can just separate by their ability. So these remaining receivers have to play extremely well.
Well, once he got the sarcasm out of his system, Jordy Nelson saying that the ball comes to him the same way as everybody, it spins and a spiral out of his right hand, he said. He talked a little bit about what you're saying here and the fact that it's not like they don't try to get open with Aaron Rodgers, but I mean, he makes those passes into the tightest of tight windows that Seneca Wallace isn't going to make. So he said even a little bit more so, you try to get that separation with Wallace. You have to get that separation. So, yeah, I mean, it will be interesting with James Jones if another week does help with his knee. And he kind of echoed Nelson. And they're going to throw their support behind Seneca Wallace. But to quote him, he said, "We just have to throw. We just have to throw. The biggest thing is him being comfortable with the plays. When you get thrown into the fire and you're trying to throw these signals out there and you're hearing the play for the first time, you're not comfortable and you're not thinking a lot and you're not able to play, relax back there." So it does start with being comfortable in the offense, and then somehow those receivers, they have to get some separation and they have to convert these passes downfield.
So, all right, to help Wallace, they got to get better pass protection at right tackle, right? So they could go one of two ways with Lang, we assume, out. They could just go back to Marshall Newhouse at right tackle and move Barclay inside. You got two new players at two positions then. Or they could insert Lane Taylor at right guard and continue with Barclay at right tackle. The guess is they're going back with Newhouse and Barclay inside, right?
That's the plan. Marshall Newhouse said he's preparing as the starter there at right tackle. Lane Taylor told me that he's not taking first-team reps at right guard. He knows that he would be next in line, so he has to stay a little bit more ready than he might have in the past. But they're going to give Newhouse that chance, and I think they're kind of chalking that up as Rust, Shea McClellan, beating him for those two sacks at critical moments, both in the fourth quarter, one on the third down early on in the quarter. The other one was a knockout punch that finished the game, and James Campen said he didn't finish. Marshall Newhouse said it was about poor technique. Whatever it was, Marshall Newhouse has to be a lot better. Seems to realize that. He said he has to be better, and that, to quote, "I'm totally up to the challenge to redeem myself," and that he has all the confidence in the world that he'll be the player he was the last 2 years, that will help him, that he'll get back to that. Looking at his snaps, 852 snaps in 2011, 1230 in 2012. It was up and down these past two seasons, which is why he was demoted in the first place, but he should be able to step in as a backup and keep things going for a game or two. That's why he's around, Bob.
I mean, he's not facing some of the people Don Barkley has faced. You know, he's got Trent Cole, who's a very tricky guy who can go inside, outside, and rush with power. He's a smart guy, but he doesn't run that well anymore. Okay, Connor Barwin, he's okay rusher. He's not like what these tackles have seen. So Newhouse has played some good football. He did some good things the other night in the run game early. He really did. But then towards the end, he wasn't finishing again. And then the stuff at the end, I mean, that's an utter embarrassment. Ending a game on a sack, you can't even get a Hail Mary off. Or you can't. They had 46 seconds to go 75 yards. Now, I know the odds are heavily against that, but, I mean, they just didn't even get underway because of that. It's terrible. Barkley got beat on the sack by Casey Wooten. It's brutal.
He seems to be well aware of what's said about him from us in the media, from fans, from the outside, too. He said, quote, "I know it's common perception that people just don't want me here. I understand that. Especially with you guys," he said. "It gets comical at times. I know I belong here. I know I can play. I've seen it. I've done it. So you move on and you get better. You don't duck your head. It's just part of the game. We're humans. We're imperfect. We're asked to do some very difficult things, and I'm aware of that." And that's when he said, "I'm totally up to the challenge to redeem myself." So,
but we all know, Ty, that anything we're saying is being said 10 times stronger in those meeting rooms by McCarthy, Clements, Campen, Hilgenberg, the assistant O-line coach. It's just the way it goes. So
absolutely. And he knows that the pressure's on him. Derek Sherrod's working his way back from the pup list. Didn't have that pad of practice this week, but McCarthy said they're going to take a close look at him, and at some point maybe he does return. So pressure's on Marshall Newhouse at this point in his NFL career. All right, Bob, we have to get some questions on Twitter here. Not a lot of time here, but let's get at it. All right, first one. This one from Art by Losers Incorporated. Did Bob get to sock some ignorant fans in the nose this week? Did you, Bob?
No, I was just taking it all in, enjoying life.
From James Childress, good friends on Twitter, he asks, why has Ted Thompson gotten away from Ron Wolf's strategy of drafting quarterbacks nearly every year? It is interesting. I mean, they should have avoided this dilemma long ago. They could have been developing arms. They could have been stockpiling. They believed that Graham Harrell would develop. They believed that B.J. Coleman could threaten Graham Harrell. Neither situation panned out.
I assume it's because they didn't like anybody, you know? I'd have to go back and look at all those drafts and see what they could have done. I've never done that. I don't think he's averse to taking a QB, but right now they are a little short.
And you know what? He does scout those guys down in Madison a ton. I know that a lot of Badger fans that read our paper, they criticize Thompson for not taking a chance on Wisconsin prospects, but they say Thompson's down there a lot, which means he's seen Scott Tolzien a lot. He knows what he has in him, which is why they gave him the raise in the first place last week to stick around.
Scott Tolzien's a pretty good three based on what these scouts have told me. We'll see.
Okay, and this one from Josh Kruger. He asks, the secondary just watched Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey catch everything in front of them. How do we generate more turnovers for Sunday, he asks.
Pass rush.
Absolutely.
That's where turnovers come from. Batted balls, crummy passes. You only got to cover a guy for 2 seconds. It's really a factor of the pass rush.
That's exactly what Mike McCarthy said today. You got to get pressure on the quarterback. You have to contest balls in the air. You think to those two touchdowns that they caught, one above Tremont Williams, one above Devon House. Those are tough situations for any cornerback to be in, but maybe you want those guys to make a play on the ball there.
I thought Tremont Williams should have had that pick the other night.
Right.
That gives him 3 dropped interceptions this year. That's and he does he have 1 pick? Or 0?
I don't believe he has any.
No? Okay.
Could be wrong. Okay, one more, Bob.
All right.
Ray Reynolds asks, Vince Young wins games. Why pass on him?
Well, he was against the Kansas City second-string defense. And he played, what, 3 quarters that night? And he's with backups. Packer backups are fine. We've seen that this year. We know Miles White can play now. You know, we knew Walker can play. We know Boykin can play. And he was a disaster. He wasn't following the game plan. He just wasn't doing anything right. Packers didn't want to pull the pin on the guy, but he left him no option. Well, you got a quarterback who's not thinking properly or clearly and doing the wrong things. I mean, I don't care how many games he's won in the past. He's not going to fit into a disciplined offense like this. And they didn't want to do it. You don't want to cut a guy after spending a month with him. It was that horrible. They had no choice.
The Packers had to swallow their pride there.
They had to.
Yeah. It was awful, that game. That was his Super Bowl, completing half your passes, producing 2 field goals. Not enough. And this is somebody who was throwing interceptions at one point during team walkthroughs. Showed a little progress. Coaches said all the right things, that Vince Young did what he could given the amount of time, but just wasn't good enough. And B, he's not an ideal backup. I mean, this is a role that Vince Young never really embraced. in his NFL career. Seneca Wallace did. So I think that's the thinking there. That does it here for the Packers podcast at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you, everybody, for listening. That's it.
I am still living with your ghost. Lonely and dreaming of the West Coast. I don't want to be your